As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing, and be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Well, this is a payoff. Irvin, I'll say when I start this, this is not actually my highest return, but I love the story of this, which is helps it become a home run. So this is a performing loan that I helped them to get paid off. So this is a cool one. I bought it for 23.5, unpaid balance at 47,000. And I was able to help him get refinanced. And what I mean by that is he had a lot of things going for him. He had good credit. We had a conversation early on when I bought the loan, he had good credit. And so immediately I'm going, okay, let's refinance. Cause he was like at a 9% interest rate, something like that, 9.5. So it was a high interest rate. And then this was a couple of years ago. So interest rates were around 4%. So I was saying, okay, listen, we can get you refinanced. Why don't you go talk to your bank and see what they can offer you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Dave Putz here from JKP Holdings. Alongside me, as always, Mr. Nathan Turner. How are you, man?
Good morning to you. Very good. Very good.
Good afternoon. So I'm glad we connect for a few minutes today and do this really interesting case study we're doing today. So before we dive deep into that kind of stuff, let's refresh people what we got going on. Another reminder, DME is coming up rather quickly. I did buy my airline tickets just yesterday, so I'll be down there with Nathan. Presenting, talking, and all that good stuff. Can you share a little bit? Yeah.
For sure. So as of today, you've got 2 weeks left for early bird tickets. So if you want to save $200, maybe you don't, that's fine. But if you want to save $200, make sure you go grab your ticket. So check this out. I put on my, there it is, my battle sweatshirt.
For those who may not know what that means, that's
just a reminder. In case people miss that, I know we've had a lot of people sign up for that, which is great.
Yep.
We do have some more space for that, but you do need to register. It's included with your ticket, but make sure you register for that the night before the conference at Axe Throwing Tournament. You can either compete or you can just watch. And somebody's gonna walk away being the DME Axe Throwing Champion. So we're we're excited to
that's
put
awesome.
That.
Up. That's awesome. So another thing that's going on, we're finally today for our next 5-week course, which I believe we're set for the first week in May, the first Tuesday. You can go to the JKP Holdings advanced education part, which that's a 5-week intensive learning cycle where you're going to be, where we talk about breaking down assets, breaking down tapes, breaking down all this good stuff that you knew what you need to do when you first look at tape. Then we dive into understanding the whole note math, we call it, where you're breaking down, you know, some for yield, some for this, and being able to check a seller's information, but also to make offers on performing partials and whatnot. And then we get into deep building a non-performing bid calculator, which most people don't have. They bid based off of a UPB or yield. We explain why that's a dangerous, dangerous thought process. So we build out. We actually spend 2 weeks building. You're going to have homework. You're going to have assignments. You have tasks to do. We have a couple of great reviews of people who've taken this course before. It is for those who have some experience but want to build up their levels of knowledge and understanding of what this space is and how to do it in a professional manner.
Yeah, and the importance of education can't be overstated in this. This is not real estate. It's not the same thing. Even though you flip some houses, you've owned some rentals, it's not the same thing. You have to learn how to do this differently. And which is fine. Most people, a lot of people come from a real estate background, myself included, but it's a different game. So you got to learn the rules to this new game because it's a different thing.
Absolutely. So I'm glad that we also run due diligence in there too. So from start of having a asset, coming up with a bid number, what kind of due diligence do you do before? Once the seller says yes to the agreement of the bid, what's due diligence afterwards? all that is part of what we're talking about in this course. And it's a weekly live session. So definitely take a look at it. If you have questions, email one of us and we'll provide everything over to you.
That's been a lot of fun putting on for us. I know I've enjoyed it. And I feel like just collaborating. I mean, every time you collaborate with somebody, you learn something new. And so I feel like that's been true this time as well.
Absolutely. So for those people who have know the basics, know the difference between a mortgage and know what a servicer is and really want to dive into it, we can't stress enough that if you're buying a performing note, don't count on continuing to perform for life because it may default.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure you have both sides covered. Additionally, we also have, we go through with the collective group of what kind of hurdles you go through. And we want you to come back every week with issues, concerns, problems. So we encourage you guys to stay involved and watch it, get a look of it. There is a 10-week part of it. And that's for those people who want to take the next step afterwards. How do you find sources and things like that? So it's additional 5 weeks, but this one's going to be our first 5 weeks. And then we'll run the second 5 weeks at a different time. So feel free to reach out to us, any questions. And for those who are about to ask this question, I know we always get it every week, this is recorded. This will be on YouTube. This will be on our podcast. You won't be able to see everything, of course, on the podcast, but it will be recorded and it will be there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So tune in now, tune in later, watch it over again, whatever.
I did get an email the other day asking, are you guys buying things? Yes, we are, right?
Yes.
But what we're doing is a little different than we did in the past, right? Everyone ran for hedge funds. Everyone ran for banks. And I'm going to tell you right now, when we're buying early on, it was easy to buy 6, 7, 8% notes, right? But if you're now buying assets that were created in 2018, 2019, 20, when you're 3, 4%, it's extremely difficult to even make a profit on that because you have to discount it a lot and the sellers probably won't take the offer.
Right.
So we're branching in. We're, as I'm sure those who've been tuning in to our bi-week webinar, we're doing a lot of stuff with owner finance and bridging this gap, which is also collected back to the DME. We're going to have owner finance people there attending. And if you're an owner finance person, you're going to have note buyers. So yeah, sometimes why do you care? It really is because when you're connecting the two of these two, we can help each other.
Absolutely.
Right? And no, we're dealing with loans at 9, 10, 11, 12 yield origination interest rates. And to get that up to a 13, a 14, 15 isn't that much of a discount.
Right.
So you're going to be able to snag these things. And we're connecting the bridge. These people don't know about note buyers and vice versa. So it's going to be awesome, our coming webinars, as well as the DME. So I encourage you guys to join both.
Yeah. And nothing like meeting people in person. It makes such a difference.
Shake a hand there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looking them in the eye, going and grabbing food together, whatever like that. It makes such a difference.
Absolutely.
Cannot be overstated. Absolutely. So make sure you get there.
So this week's a little bit different. We are not having guest hosts. So those who look forward to that, we are not. We are having some awesome upcoming webinars. We're working on connecting an RMLO and an underwriter to come on and tell us what that means. Why did note buyers care about this, that stuff? When you're dealing with owner finance, an underwriter and RMLO for owner-occupied properties is required, right? It's a Dodd-Frank regulation. So we wanted to bring those people on, explain what that means, share a little bit more about their roles, and to understand what we do if a situation doesn't have them, right?
Yeah, it's been fascinating for us as we've met and talked with other seller finance people. Either they're not aware or they don't care or they don't understand how important it is. And so we're trying to make sure that everybody understands what exactly it means, why you need this, and why you should be doing it. And it's hugely important. Hopefully we can spread that message.
Yeah, we're struggling with the fact of having these people understand that this is required. For those who we've been buying bank loans, they're all regulated already. So it's not a big deal. It's the owner finance notes. And if you guys are listening, this is a no-no. We'll go to a borrower, find a borrower, ask them for 10% down, write up a contract, and go with it. That's a no-no. Like, you can't do that. Dodd-Frank regulates the fact that if that's owner-occupied, you can't just take their money and run with it. However, if it's performing forever and it completely for, you know, performing note finalized after 30 years, you may never get caught.
Yeah.
But when it if and when it defaults, you're going to have a lot of issues. So
yeah.
On top of that, it also may be having Jeff Watson join us. So
yeah,
a lot of cool stuff coming up in the coming weeks with this idea.
Yeah.
So we're going to dive into this. We did a semi webinar presentation about this in PaperSource last year, but we expanded it for those who may never heard of it or saw it. It's our presentation on actually our past deals, numbers, data points, case studies, right? So we're excited. I'm expecting others to be excited too. This is an awesome situation to see what we saw, what we did, what kind of issues we ran into, and other things like that. So let's jump into this. Can you, Nathan's going to run the presentation, the PowerPoint for me. So let me switch.
Things we've learned as we've gone along and why it's important, all those kinds of things. All right. My screen up there.
We are bringing it up. Yes.
All right.
All right.
Yeah, this is a fun one to put together. I had initially put it together and then Dave and I worked on this together. It's kind of a fun one. Who's on first?
Yeah.
So we'll get into this. First things first, we've got to watch a little video clip.
Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
You know the guy's name on the baseball team?
Yeah. Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yeah.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
Who is on first?
Why are you asking me? I don't know. I'm asking you who's on first.
That's great.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it.
You know the guy's name on first base? Or what's probably the guy's name on first base?
Who?
So those, I'm sure, are enjoying this if you've heard the skit before. A little baseball skit for those people who I'm sure you know it. It's all about, you know, baseball. So Nathan has a really interesting perspective on this whole idea of baseball and how it hits home for those people who I'll let you just go ahead and take over. Go ahead.
So I when I exercise, I listen to different lecture series, and I was listening to one called Turning Points in American History. And it was really interesting. I learned all kinds of different things. It was really good. I didn't learn so much about American history when I was in school, since I went to school in Canada. But it's things like the Boston Tea Party, Industrial Revolution, Civil War. And then there was one lecture on baseball. And I went, really? Like, come on, that's a stretch. But he made a really convincing argument. He started talking about baseball and how that has really shaped American culture. Talking about like how many movies do you know where it's all about baseball or has some kind of baseball reference or music or comedy sketches. I mean, there are tons of them.
Yeah.
Expression, the thing that really, I was like, okay, I'm in. Started talking about expressions. When you talk about like, oh, that guy's way out in left field. And be like, oh, that, you know, I got a single, got a double. That was a home run. I mean, there are tons of them, tons of them.
A bad real estate deal is a strikeout, right? Like you just, like nothing to do with baseball. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that one was a curveball, you know, whatever. I mean, there's so many that are out there. So when he started naming off some of these expressions, I went, oh, That is really, like, talk about permeating the culture, that it has taken over a good section of the language. And if you say that that one was a strikeout or that one was a home run, people know exactly what you're talking about. And so I thought that was really interesting. So I'm in. Absolutely. So, gurus, here's the thing. You come home from a baseball game and everyone talks about the home runs or the grand slams, or like, that's the thing. Those are the highlight reels. That's all the stuff. So when you're listening to a guru, if you're in a weekend class and you hear somebody talking about all these home run deals, well, yeah, because they're the fun ones. But the reality is that most of the deals, and Dave and I have talked about this a lot, most of the deals we do are singles and doubles. Yep. Of course, we get the home runs and those are a lot of fun. And of course, we get the strikeouts because that's just part of investing.
Yeah.
But the reality is they're not all home runs.
Yeah.
And everyone can do it. All right, yeah. Real quick, just wanted to put this up here. This is something I came up with a few years back. Just kind of showing the game plan. Anytime you get into anything, you want to make sure you got some kind of plan. This is a flow chart that I'd put together. You can pause and copy it down or whatever you want to do.
I know you listen to podcasts. Let me know. I can get you a copy of it so you can see it. Just shoot an email over to me or Nathan.
Yeah. But just showing one of the things that I love about notes of the many things is that there's just so many options. You've got so many exit strategies compared to owning just a property, where we've got tons and tons of different ways that we can get out of the note versus on a property. You can rent it or sell it. You can, you know, flip it. Your options are far more limited. So I love that about notes. So this is just kind of an illustration of how that works.
Awesome.
All right. So we'll get into some case studies. This one's mine. Yeah. REOs. Okay. So this one was a strikeout. This was one that unfortunately didn't make any money. Fuller Avenue is a vacant real estate. So in that case, I have to foreclose on the property because I own the note, not the property. So I have to foreclose to take it back. Bought this one for $80,000 and I knew about a property tax bill out there for $7,000. So that's fine. I was aware of that and no problem. We thought that the house is worth something like $150,000. When it came down to it though, we only sold it after we took it back and went through the whole process, ended up selling it for about $110,000. So not nearly as much as we thought. Overall, the other factor in here, and I don't know if I've got a point for it, but the other factor in here is there are all kinds of city liens that were not showing up on the title report, which I was not aware of. So I didn't know about these city liens that added to the expenses. End of the story is it was an overall loss of about $3,600. It's not the end of the world, and I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over that, but it was a small loss. So I don't love that kind of idea, but it happens, and just want to put that out there that yes, sometimes you're going to lose money on these deals.
Yeah. Not every deal is a golden situation, right? It stinks, but
it's just how it goes sometimes. So initially it was a good plan. Everything looked good. We had these city specific rules and things that we had to jump through and these liens that we weren't aware of. And that contributed to that loss. It's like a Dave's.
Yes. So we're going to dive into another strikeout situation that we got involved with. So when we look at stuff like this, we really focus on the fact of we want to go into it with all our eyes wide open. However, we've run into situations that sometimes we know about, sometimes we don't know about. In this situation, I was guaranteed, I knew the property, I knew the issue. What can go wrong? I knew when I bought this asset that I was going to have to file an insurance claim on it. Talked to the seller was aware of it. I had the date, the time, everything locked in that I'm going to go ahead and file an insurance claim to get this property. We bought it with the idea of the fact that it was a vacant non-performer, I'm going to foreclose in Indiana, purchase price is 50. We knew about the water damage, value is 80. We're going to foreclose in a short period of time and kill it.
Yeah.
Well, as you can see, we end up selling it for $32,000 as is. What happened? We had, from the plan of going forward with the insurance claim, once we bought it, we went ahead and talked to our insurance company and said, we'd like to file a claim. And our insurance company, same one that was on the previous seller's claim, said I couldn't. And I didn't understand why. We filed claims before on other people and never had a problem. Well, we found out, and I spoke to the seller. There was nothing he could do either. This was under a different kind of forced place insurance policy. We did a webinar on that difference before, but the forced place policies, there's two different kind of policies out there, and the policies matter, right? And we've talked about this before, but depending on which policy that forced place is, there's claims made and there's occurrence policy. A claims made policy ends when the seller ends and sells a deal, that no longer any claim can be filed. An occurrence-based policy, you can file a claim anytime during that policy period. Doesn't matter. Well, we couldn't do anything with this. We had no extra strategy, right? So we ended up having to take it and sell it as is with the water damage in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And to top it off, this was with IRA money. That stinks, right? So we didn't expect it to be that bad, but it was. And it is what it is. We learned our lesson. So now, in part of it, I'm just going to make this a little larger for people. In part of it, what we learn now is we ask every seller what type of forced place insurance they have. They can get a policy just to prevent any kind of future issues, concerns, problems we may have, right? Yeah. So we ask them. And they oftentimes is, why? And give you some gracious, we have not run into too many issues of having claims made. There was a servicer plan, but just to give you a heads up, that can cause an issue. So yes, big strikeout. I plan to file an insurance claim on this, went forward with it and couldn't. Stunk.
And so for both you and I, let's again, just be clear, that's not my only loss.
No, I had to pick one, and I had a hard time choosing which one. Yeah. So I had another one that I kind of hid because I said, well, that's not in.
Yeah.
So, yes, Mark, Ray, there's a replay, YouTube and everything else. So glad you could join us. So yes, so this is a strikeout. So we have a bunch more to go. Those who are just jumping in here, I see the numbers going up here. We have a bunch more. We're on strikeouts. We're talking about past deal numbers and whatnot. So we struck out on this deal, and we have a lot more strikeouts sometimes than we plan on it. And sometimes we know it's a bad deal and we took a risk. Some deals like this one, I plan on getting $30,000 to fix the house up to insurance money and then sell for 80 and be golden.
Yeah. Didn't work. And then it just didn't happen. Yeah. Yeah. FYI, Beth from US Risk will be at DC.
Yes.
Get some free advice while you're there.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and it happened. So I think when Dave and I were looking at this presentation and talking about it, part of what we wanted to get across is the gurus, when they talk about home runs all the time, that's nice, but that's not real. The reality is sometimes you're going to lose, and sometimes it's a 41% loss, and that's not fantastic, but it happens. Yeah. And so just be prepared. Nothing is guaranteed. This is not a magic pill. All right.
Absolutely. So, yep. All right. Let's do it.
All right. So here's an example of a single for me. And Dave will get one too. So this is Clinton Avenue. Yep. This is out in Ohio. I don't remember exactly where. Cincinnati, Columbus, somewhere like that. Man, this was a tough one because I really tried for this lady. We'd had some communication, and I don't know exactly all that was going on. I know she had had it. She'd gone through a bunch of difficult things in her life, and I really tried to help her stay and be able to take care of the house. The reality was, in the position she was currently in, she just couldn't afford it. And I tried to do like a cash her keys and give her something to help her on her way, and she just fell off, and I didn't get anything else going with her. So it was really too bad, but that it happens. in the end, it was a vacant property. She eventually moved on and found somewhere else to go. So I felt, you know, some comfort in that, knowing that I didn't foreclose on a person. Typically when I foreclose, it's on an empty house.
Yeah.
So bought this one for $29,500. CMV on this was $60,000. Market value, we figured, was about $60,000. And then we started getting calls from the city saying that there's trash here and there's things that need to get fixed up and all that. This is when I still own the note. So I, first of all, I thought it was kind of interesting that I was getting calls from the city as the note holder, but I did. So, okay. And I explained to them, you know, I don't have possession. I don't really have the right to do anything to this house yet because it's not mine. I can, you know, I can take some preventative measures, but they were very understanding and they worked with me there. And that's been my experience generally. If you do get something from the city saying that there's trash or grass needs to be cut, they're usually pretty understanding. They just want it cleaned up, and we all understand that. Nobody wants a dilapidated house on their street. But they're pretty understanding. We were able to work. Eventually, we went to foreclosure auction. I was a little bit surprised that this one sold at foreclosure auction. I didn't think there was that much equity. Yeah, but it sold for a little under $40,000. So not a ton of profit on that. This one made about $2,000, about 6% return. So not fantastic. But it was a win in the end. I was hoping for something a little bit better. I really expected that I was going to take back this property and then be able to resell it for $55,000-$60,000. So it should have been better, but somebody came in an auction and that's the process. And so they ended up taking it, and that's how it goes sometimes.
So you can see, when you have equity, you can't guarantee the equity is going to come to you.
No, it sounds really nice to say, oh, you know, I've paid whatever, $29,000 for this and the house is worth $60,000. I'm going to kill it. Or somebody will buy it for closure auction and you don't. Something I think that I did really well on this one is I stayed in touch with the city and just we were able to kind of smooth things over with them in the meantime. So we didn't incur any other liens or anything else. And so that was a good move.
Awesome.
Let's look at Dave's single.
Yes. So we, this is a ground ball, right? This is a nice, simple, clean looking one, per se, but ground balls aren't always so smooth. They may hit a bump here or there.
Right.
So we bought it as a performer. It was second lien. We're excited by it. And we went ahead and it's in Texas, so we're in Edgemoor. During the owning of the asset, the borrower passed away, right? Not a killer situation. We're going to deal with the heirs. Are they going to keep it? Are they going to pay for it or whatnot? Well, gladly enough, they paid for it a monthly. Then it defaulted, got three months behind, started my foreclosure process, got reinstatement. Then I had to pay forced place insurance on it because they were not paying for it. They weren't doing anything. It was not escrowed. Try to get a hold of the daughter. Unfortunately, the son was living there, so it was really not negotiation real well. So we kind of worked through our processes here. We purchased it for just under $18,000. We had a great CMV of $170,000. The first lien was about $100,000. Our UPB was $22,000. So we bought it for just under the UPB. One of the reasons was this was a 10% interest loan, a 10% interest loan, yes. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to discount a lot, right? So those who go off 85% of UPB or whatever that goes out the wayside, it's a 10% loan. So I'm going to have to buy it for a higher percentage of the UPB simply because of that rate.
And this is a second?
Yes, it was a second.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So we bought it. We have our UPB. We have our value. We also have heirs we're dealing with. They stopped performing, they reperform and whatnot. But in the end, we started two foreclosures and got two reinstatements, but then we made our profit, right? And this continued to progress. We're still making some money. We're hoping it'll continue. What's holding it down is we're paying for forced place insurance. And unfortunately, they're doing a 2-year plan for stuff. And I'm trying to get them over to a 1-year plan, but I don't want to put them over the edge. So we're really kind of getting an 8.5% return right now on it. which should increase. We just got reinstatement last week, so we're hoping that it will kick back up. So the lesson learned, which is the next bullet, is the fact that performers can default, right? We teach this all the time. Your financial calculators say everything's great, but you can default and foreclosures can happen. So, but they also may stay performing, but might be beyond bumpy. You don't know what's going to happen in these assets. Because it's not performing doesn't mean it's going to turn performing and reinstate, which means you can't mod. And some performers default for any reason. In this case, a borrower passed away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, things happen.
This is crazy.
So I kind of going back to what we were saying at the beginning, you know, why do you need it properly underwritten and everything? Because this happens. And then you're going to have to deal with it. And if it's not done properly in the beginning, you're going to have a hard time getting through the foreclosure.
Absolutely. And just know the fact this was actually boarded with the servicer wrong at first, which even crazier. It was because of the mod, Chun 10, and it moved off the arm. It was supposed to be interest loans. The rate was to be higher, so we had to do a lot of negotiations. Right now, they've just reinstated for like $6,000. We're hoping it will for $4,200, I think it was. So we're hoping that it will kind of bump up everything once we get the money in hand. Our return maybe dropped a little higher, but I'm expecting it to reinstate, default, reinstate, default, reinstate, default, and just that bumpy ride.
And then are you just going to hang on to this one, just knowing that?
Yeah.
Going to be the pattern.
Yeah, you know, it's a situation where it's a low UPB and all that stuff. We'll hope that it will just kind of, it with the reinstatement, we should get up to like 11-12, which is fine. We'll be okay with that. But yeah,
eventually it'll pay off and then
yes,
all done. But yeah,
okay, so that's doubles awesome. We're gonna hit some doubles now. We're gonna get a little bit farther around that baseline.
A little further ahead, a little bit.
We're on the what, right?
Straight line, whatever.
We were on the who base. Now we're on the what.
Yeah.
What's on second?
Yes. So this is one. It was a non-performing loan that I resold. So this was kind of an interesting one. Loop and Drive. This was in Reno, Nevada, which is already kind of unusual. We don't see a lot of western half of the country notes. So this is kind of a cool one. The plan on this was I was going to foreclose. It was a vacant property, same kind of thing. I was going to foreclose and then take it to sale. Purchase price was $72,000. Market value $165,000. And this is a mobile home. And as a general rule, I don't usually deal with mobile homes. And this is part of the reason why. I had dealt with a mobile home years ago. And I thought that I'd learned my lesson. I knew that I needed both the title of the land and of the actual property, because mobile home is mobile. So it's, you know, oftentimes it's registered as a vehicle rather than a home.
Yeah.
So I knew I needed those two documents. And so as I was doing the due diligence on this, I saw that I had both of them. I'm like, okay, good. We're in the clear. I've done this before. Now I've learned my lesson. Ready to go. This looked like, again, it was going to be another home run. What ended up happening is as we went along, I was working with a local realtor who had given me the property value. And she came back to me and said, you know, there's an issue with this. And I said, oh, really? Like what? What do you mean? And she says, well, you don't have the proper documentation to make it a real property. I'm like, no, I've got the two documents. So, you know, I've got the title and the title. We're all good. It's everything squared away. We're cool. She's like, well, in Nevada, there's another part where it needs to be registered a different way. Or I don't remember exactly what it was, but there was a second part that hadn't been done. I'm like, oh my goodness. Are you kidding me? I learned my lesson. In the end, I was able to sell it to another buyer. I sold the note off to another buyer, somebody who is local to Nevada, who understood all the rules for you know, the special Nevada and mobile home rules. And overall, got a pretty nice profit, $20,000, 27%. That's pretty good. And I'm fairly happy with the 27% return. This all took place in less than a year. So if you do that, you know, as an annualized, that's gonna jump even more, but just plain over ROI, that's 27%. So part of this one, I think, was just recognizing my own shortcomings. I ignored both the state rules and my own rules. I had said, I'm not going to do any more mobile homes. And then this one came up and I'm like, yeah, but look at those numbers. That looks fantastic. And I already know what I'm doing. So we're all good. I'm going to do this. And luckily I was able to get out with a really decent return. But I think I lucked out on this one. So I count my lucky stars and move on to the next. But again, most of the deals that we do are going to be singles and doubles.
Yes.
So yes, we're going to show you some home runs and they're awesome and they're
yes.
fun and we love it when that happens. But most of the time, same as you go to a baseball game, you're going to see singles and doubles. You don't see a ton of home runs.
Yeah. And singles and doubles are okay. And you know, the home runs are great stories. And like I said before, following your gurus are always okay. You're right. But getting single doubles, what this business is all about. Yeah. If you're swinging for the fences, you're going to strike out. And or the balls get caught on that warning track, right? So a lot of problems can happen when you go for those big risky things. If I can get a single double all the time, I mean, you're gonna get your returns. You're gonna get around 10-12%. I mean, it's not bad, right? So if we get a little bit higher, it's even better, right? So when we get to 20s and 30s and 40s, that's really good return on an annual basis. Because think about this: if you're at all borrowing any kind of money at an interest rate of 8, 10, 12, and you're getting a 20%, that's great.
Yeah.
Right. So think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's check out your double, Dave.
All right. We're going doubles. So a name is double in the corner. So if I'm sure you've lost baseball, you can hit a double right in the corner, you can get second base. So we're on the what, right? This non-performer was owned. So great guest question. Could you let us know how quick your turnaround on these was? Great question. I did not actually put it in here. I'll see if I can bring this up and we can add it to the other ones. But yeah, I appreciate your question, Greg. So the last one, he just said it was about less than a year. This one here was, I can bring it up too. I think it's just 18 months or so. I'll see if I can find it real quick for you guys so you can kind of see what it looks like. Or whatnot. So,
but really quick, that's a great point, because again, notes are fantastic and I love the business and I'm going to do it forever. It's not get rich quick.
Yes.
Average turnaround time for me, and you can say yours, Dave, but average turnaround for me is about 13, 14 months. If I'm going to take something
it's more than a year.
And resell it, it's more than a year. So don't think you're going to make $1 million day one, month one.
So as Nathan nicely kind of stalled me for a second, I was able to bring it up. So this next one, we did in about, we have a 0.9 months. So that was 9 years. So that was just over 11 months, right? So in 11 months, we went into the fact that this double here was actually the loan, the property was owned by an HOA, but the borrower defaulted. They were still subject to us. Right, because they were behind us in the situation. So we took over the non-performing loan and we had to foreclose in first position, right? So when we looked at this stuff, we bought this knowing the fact that the HOA owned it. I had to foreclose on it because the borrower was still on the loan, right? They were renting it out, doing whatever they're going to do with it, knowing the fact that we are where we are. So this was in Florida. We then file for foreclosure. And I have this one in here for some learning lessons. For those who may not know, and I'll explain in a second, what we did a foreclosure with non-merger language. What's that mean? Non-merger language means that the debt is removed from the instrument of security. So I'm removing the mortgage and notes, separating them. Why did I do that? I can now foreclose, but then I can take ownership of the property at the same time. Right. So I'm just foreclosing on the debt to get rid of the title problem on the property, but I'm actually owning the property during the process. So I'm foreclosing on myself pretty much. Right. So I did the foreclosure while owning the property and rehabbing it, took the risk. We rehabbed the property. We bought this property. This is 2017, I think the date was for this one. So we bought it knowing the fact that the value of the property, our CMV on this one, was $50,000. The condo was vacant when we bought it, but we were going to rent it out. We're going to fix it up and do all that stuff. Owned by the HOA, remember. So we had to get a deed in lieu from the HOA, pay them money, get the deed in lieu into our name so we can own it, so we can start doing rehab work on it. Now, any rehab work we do, we can lose everything on it at the auction. So our next line, we purchased it for $17,000, right? The unpaid balance is 84. We're in great shape. And the reason we bought it for 17 was based actually on the value of the property. We don't bid based on that, but the reason it's not higher based on the UPB is because of the fact that the value is 50,000.
Yeah.
We did all this work and a lot of expenses, and we ended up selling it for $59,000. On the next line, it shows our rehab and our legal costs was $27,000. Our all in, including our purchase price, was $44,000 all in. Okay. But because we had to buy it from the HOA, we had to negotiate with them. We bought it for $3,000, a deed in lieu. They know they didn't have any kind of ground to stand on, and HOAs don't really want to play the real estate game. They just want to get their HOA money, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting part of it. So overall profit was $8,000, but we ended up selling it for $59,000, and we made a 17% return. Great situation. This happened about, like I said, about 11 months. We were thinking about renting it. We sold it quick too. So we could have sold for a little bit more, but we wanted to get rid of it. This was just before some other stuff going on with some business stuff. So we wanted to get that kind of process going. We understood the fact that I didn't know what I didn't know. So I had to understand that the state rules also apply to the situation, not only to me, but I had to use the state rules of being able to do deed in lieu, also the non-merger language, right? And the fact that I'm terrible at rehabs. I hate them. I don't like them. My partner loves them, right? Yeah. So I would have sold this as is and probably lost money. But I recognize the fact that doing a bad job of what I am, I let the rehab situation take place. I let the non-merger language take place. Own it, fix it up, and able to sell it because we're able to do it crunch time. So we learned some stuff. Same thing with Nathan's double. I took his words because we learned the same kind of concept here. That state rules of non-merger language is not nationwide. It's really just a specific location in certain states. But also knowing the fact of rehabbing, even though it's not my back pocket, I would have sold it for less and sold it as is. It would have done a bad situation for this note. So we did rehab it. We spent $27,000 in rehab and legal costs. A lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, 17%. I mean, that's decent. That's,
yep.
That's a nice return.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
So we're going to see those more often.
We're rounding the bases. We're getting, for those who didn't watch the beginning of it, we did a Albany Costello's bit in the beginning of who's on first. So we're rounding third base and we're getting to our big home runs. Go ahead, Nathan.
Getting there. Triples. I mean, yeah, and you get triples. They happen. This is a good one. Mill Street. This is in Illinois somewhere. I forget exactly where. Just right close to St. Louis, Missouri, just across the river there. But anyway, Mill Street. Forget the name of the town. This is a non-performer, NPL, to a reperformer that I then sold. So a few moving parts here. This one was a lease option. And some people have heard me talk about that before. I buy lease option contracts as well because I can get them at a good deal. And then I convert them to something that's more sellable. So I converted these guys to a contract for deed, a CFD. Really nice couple. And they were very willing to do that. And they saw all the benefits. And that was fantastic. So I bought this one for $27,500. Unpaid balance is $54,000. And it's really interesting when I go through with the borrowers and I compare the lease option contract to a contract for deed, and I show them how much money that they can save over time by converting to a percentage rather than a flat fee coming off of their monthly payment going towards principal. It's a no-brainer. It's a real easy conversation to have, and they jump on that because they see immediately. You know, you mean I'm going to save how much money over and I'm going to pay off my house that much faster? Oh my goodness. So a real easy thing to convert. I haven't had really any issues with that. Once this was converted, I sold it to another investor as a reperforming note for $39,000. Plus I'd already received $3,500 in income. Overall, $25,000 profit on a 43% return. That's great. And love it when that happens. Again, these are not the deals we see every day, but it happens.
Yeah.
Time frame on this one. This was right around a year, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it was right around a year. But it takes time. All these things take time. It's nice to think that you can just, you know, wrap it all up in a month, but it takes time.
Yeah.
So get used to it. this was kind of the plan from the beginning. One of the things we're able to do that worked really well is I increased the interest rate, and kind of sort of, cause they didn't actually have an interest rate before because it was a lease option. So because I was converting it, I was able to set it. I believe we set it at like 9%, which makes it very attractive to sell off to somebody else. And so I did not have to take a ginormous discount in order to sell it.
Sure.
So, you know, that's another one. Again, doesn't happen all the time, and there's definitely work involved. It's not just a super easy get it all done in a month or two. It takes time, but it worked out very well in the end.
So we had a question from Jose on Facebook. This is streaming Facebook and LinkedIn, and it will be recorded and sent to YouTube and our podcast as well. So the question from Jose is that his understanding that note holders, decide when they decide to foreclose, that they're only entitled to the debt owed, not the property. So we're going to go a little bit more into able to keep the property in collecting debt foreclosure. Yeah. Thank you for asking that question. So a note is created, it's secured by a secured debt, secured by a property. So the bank or us has the ability to recapture that security instrument, like your security of the loan, which is the property, and take it back. Now, if we go to foreclosure auction, right, and we can sell it for as much as up to the UP legal balance, which is UPB plus any additional costs like legal costs, as well as like back taxes and any kind of stuff like that. We can sell up to that number. We could add capital cash and go higher if we chose to. Now, if it doesn't sell at the foreclosure auction, this is not for every state, for mine, like Ohio is a little different, but we won't get into that.
Right.
If in the state situation, if that goes to auction and no one bids on it, even if there's equity, which I've had situations when it happened, that loan goes to the highest bidder, which is the bank, because we set the minimum. Okay. We set the minimum and we now are the quote unquote winners. Well, if there's equity or no equity, we get the property back.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of times when there's equity, it usually sells the auction.
Yeah.
But not all the time. So yes, you can get the property back in a note foreclosure. You're taking the asset security, you're getting your money back, but you can. Now if the asset sells higher, right, than the legal balance, the borrower actually can get that capital for themselves. There's some intricacies that goes along with that, but it can happen. So hopefully, Jose, that answered your question. Feel free to put in the chat if it any additional. So we're going to jump into my triple here.
So let me just comment on that real quick. And I know where Jose is coming from. That's exactly what I used to think, is like, this is a great way to get property. It can be. The more that I've gotten into notes, the more I realize I don't want the property. So I've had this many times where I'm going through foreclosure. Let's say the house is worth $100,000. What's owed to me is $120,000. I will try to choose what my minimum bid is. So I would put it in at like 80, because I'm trying to gauge what's just enough equity that somebody will buy this at auction. Because I don't actually want to own the property. If I own the property, then I've got to get into it. Then I don't know what the condition is inside. I've got to deal with trashing it out at the very least. Property taxes have now become my problem. All these things that I don't want to deal with. So if I can work it so that I can just sell it at auction and never actually have to take possession of the house or ownership of the house, that's
liability.
Yeah.
I want to get rid of tenants, toilets, and turnovers, right? I don't want to be in that position. I lose appreciation, but at the same time, I'm becoming a bank. Banks are not landlords. They don't play that game. They borrow money for a cheaper rate. They usually take your money from a savings account, right? And they're giving you 4, but then they loan it out at 8.
Yeah.
And do it over and over and over and over again, right? Yeah. So you're welcome, yeah. Jose. It's a great question you have. We get this question quite often, and we're going to have more and more. We encourage you to check out DME in June if you're not attending to Nashville. We're going to have a lot of owner finance and a lot of note buyers come together. So hopefully, if you have questions about that, let us know.
And if you just want to learn more about notes, that's the place to be. DiversifiedMortgageExpo.com. Okay, go.
Yeah, you got it. And we have an advanced training class coming in next week. That's another plug too. So anyway, let's go on.
Yeah.
We're in the triple. We're into the outfield gap, right? Triple. So in this situation, we bought the note with the idea that we love the area. It's a great place for us. This was in Florida. And we knew the fact that we're going to get in a situation that was awesome because of a few reasons. When we look at the file, the seller of the note already got a deed in lieu done with the borrower, right? They already had non-merger language already done and was already in the process of foreclosure. So we picked up a loan in the middle of foreclosure that we own the property. Hmm. Now we can rent it out. We can do anything we want because now we own it. Deed in lieu of foreclosure allows us to literally own the property deeded to us and not foreclose in their name. So it doesn't hurt them. We foreclose on ourselves, right? While we did that, we rehabbed it again. We rented it out as well. What an awesome situation that we can really go into and have a property. Now, deed in lieu foreclosure is not available in all states, right? Mm-hmm. We go into our advanced class, which states are available or not, but it is. So this is in Florida, a place called Locust Ave. We purchased it knowing that it's in foreclosure, already established. We purchased it for $21,600. Our value on it was around $60,000. We ended up having $48,000 in expenses, which included fixing the house up.
Okay.
Right. However, the UPB was $100,000 when we bought it. We bought it based on the fact that we thought it would sell at auction. And we were hoping it wouldn't because we put some money into it. And we were kind of crossing our fingers.
Yeah.
But we want to rent it out while we foreclose on us. This process, this deal took 2 years to do. Just an idea. It wasn't fully through foreclosure. It had no judgment. It wasn't that far into it. But it was really interesting to get into this deal in the beginning of foreclosure, rent it out, make some money while we're foreclosing on it, have money coming in. It was a very weird shaped house too. So. Like it was like an odd long mini hallway, front was wide, middle hallway. It was just very odd. So, yes. So we went ahead and we sold it. We finished our foreclosure, rented it out. And then we sold it for $120,000.
Nice.
Really sweet situation. We held it for 2 years. So our overall profit was $47,000. Including the $10,000 in rent that we got for an annual ROI of 68%.
Very good.
Right. We undervalued it because of the asset prior to foreclosure. The value of the property was not in good shape. So our value was 60 grand. But once we rehabbed it and did everything we could do with it, it was over $120,000. And for those who don't know, this is the one thing we love about Florida. While you're foreclosing, value usually go up. So it really benefits us while we're in foreclosure to hold the asset because it increases in value. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yep. Awesome.
Oh, do you have another one?
Are we skipping that one? Yep, just go right to...
All right. Bottom line,
49. Home runs.
Nice work. All right. Oh, this is a payoff. Irvin, I'll say when I start this is not actually my highest return, but I love the story of this, which is helps it become a home run. So this is a performing loan that I helped them to get paid off. So this is a cool one. I bought it for 23.5, unpaid balance at 47,000. And I was able to help him get refinanced. And what I mean by that is he had a lot of things going for him. He had good credit. We had a conversation early on when I bought the loan, he had good credit. And so immediately I'm going, okay, let's refinance. Cause he was like at a 9% interest rate, something like that, 9.5. So it was a high interest rate. And then this was a couple of years ago. So interest rates were around 4%. So I was saying, okay, listen, we can get you refinanced. Why don't you go talk to your bank and see what they can offer you? So he came back and he said, yes, I can do that. Here's the issue is that the bank is going to require, they had done a home inspection and they required him to replace the furnace in his house. And to make it a little extra complicated, he had some health issues that meant that he couldn't just do like the cheapest furnace out there. He needed like a high efficiency something or other that was going to help clean the air for his health condition, which cost about $11,000. So it was not a nothing expense, and he didn't have an additional $11,000 sitting around. So when I got that story, and knowing that the bank is ready to go as soon as this is done, I actually fronted the money. I was able to pay for his brand new furnace in his house. And then when he came back and was able to refinance, I got all of that money back.
Wow.
So it was an awesome story. I love being able to help. Overall profit on this, a little over 25,000, but an 87% expenses in. So it is a killer deal. And what made it even better is I was able to help somebody, and that feels really good. So that made that even better. That was a fun one. I like that one.
We hope that these stories kind of help you kind of give you a light of what the situation is. It can be a passive investment strategy here, but there's a lot of stories that go along with our assets, right? It's, you know, when you go to conferences, you're going to tell stories left and right. So it's really kind of cool to hear about it. It makes it actual real life. It's not just a numbers game at times.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of stories like this.
Kind
of fun
all the time.
One of the questions Greg has, did you put another lien on it for $11,000?
You know, I didn't. It was a gentleman's agreement. We had a pretty good relationship, and I did add it to, so I didn't have anything like an additional lien, but I did say, you know, we had an agreement kind of in writing over email. And I knew that, and I got a copy of the receipt. I had the receipt myself. So I was able to add that to the payoff without any problem because I had proof of the additional expense. So it was, you could make it a little more formal, and maybe I should have, but I knew the situation. I knew the guy and I felt comfortable going ahead and doing that. I felt good about that. But this one, I said at the end of this one, it was a situation where, you know, you're up to bat and then you take a step outside of the batter's box just to kind of evaluate everything for a second, then step back in and okay, here we go. And it ended up being a really good payoff.
Awesome. That's good to hear. So we're going to step onto our home run for myself. I think this was a really cool, and this story was really interesting. Unfortunately, this was, it's helping people is an awesome thing. This was a situation I thought I was going to be a really big help, being an old landlord dealing with tenants. But this was a reverse situation. We literally were helping the tenant get a hold of the landlord. Crazy, right? So we bought this thing. Go back up one. We're going to do the other one. Should be the number two one.
And the number two?
Yeah.
Here we go. Yeah. This guy?
It's, let me see. Yep, cool.
All right.
Sorry about that, guys. Hidden the PowerPoint slide, but I think you're running it manually, so it's all good. So we look at the fact that this situation is, we bought this knowing the fact that this is a non-performer, and I thought I was going to foreclose, and the tenant was having a hard time. I did a door knock, which I don't do as often anymore as I used to. But we get a hold of the tenant and we said, listen, we would like to talk to the landlord about what's going on, blah, blah, blah. We weren't going to tell much. We just wanted, and the tenant said, I'd love for you to let me know if you can get a hold of the landlord. I've been paying my rent payment, but I can't reach her. Hmm. We said, oh, so my door knock says, here's new address. This is great. Can you go knock at their door? Not a problem. So went over the door knocking. The borrower was living in her own house. She had worked nights. The door knocker thought she had something happened to her. So the door knocker called the police, had the police show up. try to get her open the door, and she just was tired from sleep working overnight. Not a really good situation to be in, but it is what it is. But we then got the borrower to reinstate, put $5,000 down, working it, awesome. We did notice when we were working it that the HOA had started a foreclosure just like 3 years ago, but I ignored it. I thought, what situation would an HOA, there's the borrower into our lien, especially in Ohio, there's no super lien ruling. What are we gonna do? So we went ahead and HOA then all of a sudden within, I think it was 2 months after us doing this, getting reinstated money, like December, February, completed the foreclosure, has judgment, and set an auction date. We found out, not worrying about it at all, that our lien, our first lien, was never agreed in the judgment settlement to be part of it at all. We're not named at all. They had been sent letters, never responded to the foreclosure action by the HOA. So we are actually out of it completely. We lost our entire position on this note.
Wow.
We then asked the HOA if we can jump in second position. So we had a little bit of a deal we had to pay off. And it was like $6,000 or so we had to pay the HOA. We also didn't factor in some of the things like the annual tax amount. I had to pay for that. I didn't know it at the time. It was an older deal. And I didn't know at the time I had to pay, you know, my taxes while I'm foreclosing. I didn't even think about adding it in my expense situation. So we got the borrower to reperform. She got foreclosed on, right? Then we ended up having to, we had a tenant who was in the property. So we bought it for $12,000. We had $14,000 of expenses, including, I think it was like $8,000 for foreclosure, taxes, and then you got a little rehab we had to do. Mm-hmm. We then went ahead and we had our tenant in there for $800 a month. So we can't kick the tenant out. They're active. They're current. So right. We allow them to stay in the house. We had thought the house value was probably around, you know, $50,000, $60,000. It was not a condo, but a townhouse area. It was a situation. The HOA was friendly with us. We're good with things. The UPB was $48,000. We ended up selling this thing for $68,000. And we are into the deal for $26,000.
Nice.
Including renting it for 8 months, our profit on this thing was $42,000 over 18 months, 161% return. We basically learned from the situation that we had a confused landlord because she didn't know how to deal with tenants and we're going to help her out. We had a great local value. We knew the fact this was basically a condoplex area and the value was pretty solid. This is our highest, and I added this at the end, our highest ROI, I looked at it through it, was $697, not this deal, but I kind of plugged it at the end of this slide. Our highest ever, I looked at it, was about 697% return.
Nice.
All right. Boring story, but, well, not boring story, but it was worse. The tenant was happy that we actually were responding to things. The landlord was happy to get out of it. She had taken a course on being a landlord and hated it.
Yeah.
Single female, but it was really interesting. And then we sold it. It was so easy to sell this thing. We had multiple offers. I think we listed for like 60, got 68 in a matter of 18 months and made a killer return.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. ROI is not boring. You're right, Greg. ROI is not, we don't calculate our deals based on ROI. We calculate based on like IRR and things like that. But yeah, which we talked about in our advanced class. But yeah, again, we can show these home runs. I had another one like Nathan was showing that was another good returner, but these can happen all the time, right? Indeed. But they can also strike out all the time too. So if you bought one and struck out, your next one may be a home run. You don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, settle in because it's the whole game. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And sometimes it's going to be a huge grand slam and other times it's a total strikeout and everyone should.
But the only way to learn is by doing and networking with others, getting out there and talking to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. So around on the bases, like you say, Dave, one's going to be a strikeout. One's going to be a single. Just keep going. Keep going. Because those home runs are definitely out there. And the more experience you get, the more those seem to come around. But just keep going, keep playing the game and watch your coaches, man.
Yes.
This, you can't just walk into this business. And we talked about this a little bit before. You can't just walk into this. There's too many rules. There's too many things. We talk all the time. Dave and I's businesses are completely separate, but we bounce ideas off each other all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to see, you know, what do you think about this? Have you ever run into that? And all the time.
Talk, communicate. Time.
Yeah.
Networking is a big thing in this business.
Yeah. And there's
nobody bats a thousand. I like Nathan's comment on this one. Nobody bats a thousand. You know, and watch for signs. If you think something looks weird, acts weird, ask questions, ask your attorney or whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of people out there that can help help coach you along. So even if they're not necessarily paid, but there are a lot of people that can help you figure stuff out.
Absolutely.
I think this is the last side. I just said, just don't spit. Yes. It's gross. Just don't disrespect the game. And part of it is learning the rules. You can't just go off willy-nilly, half-cocked. Like you've got to learn the rules of this game because it's not good. And if you get any, you disrespect too much, you're going to get thrown out of the game.
Yeah.
So make sure you
respect the fact the borrowers, respect the sellers, respect the vendors, so the expectations are realistic, right?
Yeah.
You can say, listen, I expect this to be done in 2 weeks, but you have to be optimistic and say, listen, this may take longer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ask for questions, you know, set expectations for yourself, but also for other vendors. Hey, if I don't hear from you in 2 weeks, I'll be giving you a call. Is that okay? And they say, well, it may take 3 weeks. So can we do 3 weeks? Just respect each other.
Yeah.
Right. You want to respect borrowers, right? If you try doing something that will hurt the borrower, you're going to get beat up later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get hurt. So just don't do it. Just be a good person.
Yeah. That's it. Absolutely. So I know you have two little things there, but it's good to see the fact that, you know, we want to make fun of the fact that, you know, this is a, you know, round the base baseball thing. And Alba Costello beginning video is kind of an introduction to the fact that we're going for all the bases, right? This is all about connecting with other people and networking and understand the space. Ask questions. Returns will happen and returns will fail. But we want to show you the gamut of everything we've learned, and we will strike out again, and I will hit home runs again. It just happens, right?
Absolutely.
We try to prevent them. We don't know what it's going to run to. So those people say, I'm buying this loan because it's going to perform, or it's not going to perform because I want the property. Doesn't mean you're going to get the property. They bring in state, you ain't getting the property.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have you seen that, Dave, where you're going down one road and like, oh, for sure, this is the way it's going to end up. And then it doesn't.
Absolutely.
It takes a detour and you go, oh, didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Like it didn't what you expected, right? And things just happen. A borrower dies
all the time.
What can I do?
Yeah.
So, well, guys, I appreciate you guys jumping in there for a little while and spend some time with us and just kind of, you know, being there with us. So if you have any questions, curiosities, whatnot, please reach out to us. If you have any question about that PowerPoint slide or deals examples, you can post in one of our groups. We both have two different groups that are going on, but you can post anywhere. And we encourage you to join up with DME that's coming in June. And we have our advanced training, which will be coming up in a week. I'll be probably sending emails out probably the next couple of days. It's a 5-week intense course, but you will learn a lot and we'll have one-on-one conversations about different things. So guys, I appreciate you guys joining me. Of course, Mr. Nathan Turner, hopefully it's nice weather. We are sunny skies and gorgeous outside. But hopefully everyone has a great weekend. Happy hunting, happy investing, but stay in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody.